OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
So let's turn our attention to the Camogie final this weekend, and I'm delighted to say Sarah O'Donovan is with us for a preview of Galway against Kilkenny. Sarah, good morning to you.
Good morning.
This Kilkenny team have been in multiple All-Ireland finals in recent years, but their record is not great in the actual finals themselves, and it's not great by a matter of inches. So they have won some. They're not. This isn't quite a Mayo hard luck story, but it's certainly a team who has found the big occasion to be just one step too far. This Galway team, on the other hand, I think is a team that has a bit more confidence about them, about how they're going to handle the big day. Is there a pattern? Am I reading too much into what's happened in the past and this should be a separate game?
I think so, because a lot has changed over the last year. Brian Dowling has come in with Tommy Shefflin, Henry Shefflin's brother, and they've given a new impetus to this Kilkenny team. Look, nobody wants to lose 4 out of 5 All-Ireland finals, and that's what Kilkenny have done. But as you said, it was a matter of inches. We're talking about losing games on the buzzer. So while Galway might have more confidence, Kilkenny's experience is massive, you know, and we if they had won those games, we'd have been talking about the best team over the last 20 years.
And so, are they on the verge of becoming that team then? I suppose a victory will actually allow them to, I don't know, maybe get over that mental hurdle that we saw with the Dublin Footballers, for example. It took them 3 All-Ireland defeats in a row, I think, before they became the best team in the country and won the last 4. Is there something similar going on with Kilkenny Camogie?
It ebbs and flows, as it tends to do in women's sport. You have players who are incredibly diligent and committed for a period of 10 years, and they walk away with 1 All-Ireland. And then you have new players who come in, they get an All-Ireland in their first year and don't see a medal for another 6 years. And they tend to move in and out of the sport. You don't have the same, I suppose, longevity for the majority of Camogie players that you would in men's teams. So, yes, there's a core of the team who've been there for a long time, but then there's a new team that's quite fresh. And trying to keep them together for a longer period is unlikely, because some of the players are coming to the end of their careers.
And what is it that Brian Dowling and Tommy Shefflin have brought to this team that's different from the previous years?
I think they've gone away from the system. And in the semi-final against Cork, the two boys decided to back their own players. So there was a lot of talk about the Cork forwards and how good they were and the system that they had. And the lads went man to man, and Davina Tobin in particular, a man marking specialist as she's become to know, marked Amy O'Connor out of the game. You know, there wasn't a 2-on-1, there wasn't a sweeper system in play. You went with your man, you won your own battle. Probably a little Brian Cody-esque, but I suppose it worked, you know, so there's no surprise there.
That's interesting, because we were talking with Max Darcy before the 2 semi-finals, and she was making the point that actually the game had evolved in a different direction for most of the other teams. So it's interesting to hear Kilkenny being very Kilkenny in their outlook and their philosophy, and it worked for them.
Yes, and look, it was a very exciting game to watch. And I suppose in the second half, the real strong proponents of Kilkenny's game came to the fore. Denise Gall was playing wing forward, and she caught some incredible ball out of the sky. You know, she is an out-and-out hurler, and we talk about her a lot on the Women's Hurling podcast. We've been following it avidly for the last 10 weeks. And it was those incredible moments in the game that were the difference between Cork and Kilkenny. It was those real hurling moments. And that's what probably we were so proud of, you know, seeing the game come to that level.
Sarah, Neil here, just to hop in and just to go back on the kind of the difficulties Kilkenny have had in those finals of the past. And you mentioned how they probably have a core of experienced players there. How difficult is it for players like that to be going back to a game against an opposition or a game, you know, at a stadium where you kind of associate it with bad memories, that, you know, this is the place where you might have let yourselves down a year or two before. I'm kind of thinking now at the same time, you might be the wrong person to ask considering you're from Cork and you don't really do that, you know, lack of self-confidence or anything like that.
Well, I've lost once in 2007 to Wexford in Croke Park, and that was pretty bitter. But we don't dwell on that. We just keep moving forward. I suppose from Kilkenny's point of view, they lost 3-14 to 17 points last year in Croke Park. And yes, it hurt, but every player loves a redemption story. And this Kilkenny team love a big day. You know, they've played really well this year coming into the semi-final. They got a big result against Cork, who were the favourites. I think the shackles are off, to be honest. As I said, there doesn't seem to be systems in play. They go out, they win their own ball. yes, there's tactics. Of course, there's tactics. Henry Shefflin's brother is involved. You know, Brian Dowling's involved. But certainly the girls have focused on their best attributes. They're great distributors of the ball. They're very pacey. And they love to defend. You know, that's a big Kilkenny, I suppose, style as well in terms of the defenders that they have. They're top class. You know, this is a very, very strong Galway attack. But the Kilkenny backs aren't going to fear them.
Galway obviously won their three group games and then in their semi-final beat Tipperary. What kind of form have they been in as the reigning All-Ireland champions? And as far as I know, that certainly there was a core of the team who were very young last year. Have they shown that kind of jump that you get from being All-Ireland champions, that extra confidence, that pep in your step, that actually, you know what, we can do this. Why wouldn't we be here?
They have, but yet they haven't clicked. Cahill is unfortunately struggling with an abundance of talent. He has 23 players, I would say, that could easily slot into his first 15. And he's been doing a lot of juggling for the championship. So we haven't had a set midfield. We've had a different half forward line. We've had a different full forward line. We haven't seen them all, the same 15, play for two games in a row. And I wonder, will that be to their detriment on Sunday?
And in terms of their playing style, how do they like to play?
Fast, loose. they have a very good half back line, really great distributors of the ball. Their forwards benefit hugely from that. Orla McGrath in the semi-final, case in point, she got some serious ball from her half back line, from Emma Hellebert and Tara Kenny, and she popping ball over the bar. Same with Eilish O'Reilly. Siobhan McGrath came on for the last 10 minutes and had two goal chances, but for great saves from the tip keeper, Ronnie Slattery. So that's where the difference probably between Kilkenny and Galway is that Galway's bench is better in that it's got more experience on the bench. So that's the only area where I would say Galway have weight.
This game is obviously live on terrestrial television on Saturday afternoon, and it's in Croke Park, and there's no doubts about where the game is going to be played. What did you make of the whole farrago and the fiasco around the Women's All-Ireland Football semi-final last week, which had a change of venue and a change of throw-in time a couple of hours before the game was due to throw in?
I worked in event management with Mark Pollock for 4 years for Run in the Dark, and that was obviously a global event, and your event managers and your event organisers have to make sure that every detail is covered off. And the LGFA is an organisation that prides itself on being professional and organised, and they let themselves down really badly last Saturday. I'd obviously started the week prior not making sure that the venue was covered off, and then their house of cards, which, you know, was, I suppose, is balanced precariously because you're relying on organisations to give you their venues. It fell apart, didn't it? It really, really fell apart.
So we had Liam O'Neill on yesterday. He was the president who had actually gone to Central Council at the Camogie Association and the LGFA and made the pitch that the time to bring the organisations together was then. So that was like the middle of the last decade, at the start of the early part of the last decade. And it didn't happen. The LGFA Central Council had voted on that occasion not to go with it. What could possibly have been the fears that they had about being swallowed up by the bigger organisation? Was some of that founded in some ways? Because I certainly feel like you need to be careful when you go into a new organisation about what you're actually getting. The world has definitely changed, and you could be far more demanding about equality right now than maybe you might have felt even 8 years ago. Not that you shouldn't have been able to in the time, you know what I mean? So what are the fears? What's preventing this from happening?
I think it boils down to power. I don't see why the Camogie Association and the Ladies Football Association couldn't go in under the umbrella of the GAA and be financially independent. You know, as sponsors are looking at this, and those sponsors who would have been involved in last Saturday's game will be very affronted by how they would have lost an opportunity last Saturday in losing out on the televising of the game. How are they going to go to the LGFA next week and ask for assurances that this won't happen again in 2021? And the LGFA can't guarantee that because they don't own the assets that they're looking to sell. So, you know, unfortunately, as much power as they have very little after, because the assets they don't own.
So what's the solution?
I genuinely think they're going to have to go in under the GAA and accept that. There will be things that they will lose, but they will gain so much more. And I think they'll gain a lot of trust from the sponsors, and you'll see actual financial rewards from it, I would feel, in knowing that they are comfortable and that they do own the assets that they're actually renting out, say, to the sponsors that they have. You know, right now, player participation is going to be affected by last week's debacle. It's going to be a struggle for inter-county managers, credible inter-county managers, to commit to inter-county teams in the LGFA based on what happened last weekend. And you're going to have sponsors asking lots of hard questions at the end of the year about how they can be assured that such a thing wouldn't happen again.
Well, I mean, TG Carr lost the right to broadcast the game. That's one of the whole reasons they're the sponsor of the entire organisation. It was a disaster from their perspective, and we didn't get to see that game. And so therefore, there's less interest in the game the following week, because actually we don't know what that team is really like. This is the time of the year when a lot of casual fans tune in and go, OK, I'm going to watch this now and see what happens in the All-Ireland final. For me, the big thing has to be about funding. And finally, questions are beginning to be asked by our politicians about equality in funding. If you look back at sports history globally, the big turning point in America is in Title IX, when that comes in, it says you can have money all you want for federal programs so long as it's divided equally, that it's not, you can't have 90% for your football team and 10% for your gymnastics. It has to be, we split it 50-50. Until the government says to the GAA, you guys have to sort all this out, and we're not giving you any money until it goes 50-50 between the two organisations. Until that happens, I think nothing's going to happen. But that has to be what the LGFA and the Camogie Association, if they were smart about this and political about this and lobbied together, then you could have that sorted early next year. And actually, it would be a good thing, because the government would increase the funding, as opposed to saying, OK, we're going to keep the funding the same as it is, and we're going to take some from the men's game, because no one's going to do that.
Well, you had, what, 3 million awarded to the men to get these championships up and running, and 700,000 awarded to the ladies. Split that down the middle, you've got 1.25 million for each. You know, it, all of a sudden, it's a very a formidable opportunity for the Camogie and ladies football to get going. And you have situations, Saturday being a case in point, Effie Fitzgerald, the Cork manager, looked at his team situation on Saturday morning and said, I can't take a risk that my team will get to Dublin safely on Sunday. So the costs that they incurred to get their team to Dublin and stay on Saturday night paid off. You know, they were in place on Sunday when the organisation let them down really badly, and they were able to move their venue and be organised for a throw-in that was a half an hour earlier.
Money makes a difference, it turns out. Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. Sarah, great stuff. Thanks a million. Who's going to win?
I've backed Kilkenny on the podcast to win by 3, so I have to stay. I can't turn 2 days later.
You could have picked the other one here, and then you'd have been covered either way. Sarah, good stuff. Thanks a million.
Bye.
Cheers. It's Sarah Dunham giving us some thoughts there on the Kilkenny Galway game, 7 o'clock Saturday night.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.